One, AI is doing. And that has fundamentally shifted the nature of work. Manufacturing requires three things, I feel. Requires depth, requires expertise, and requires understanding context. In order to really get the capability outputs and the productivity outputs from AI, you have to have subject matter expertise. A lot of the young people are, you have to have these three things as skills. You know, first is the attitude to go deep, the willingness to go deep, I think is very important. It's like a train that has left the station. Once you flag it off saying we're committed to AI, it will have consequences. Being aware of that is very, very important.
Hi everyone, welcome to Chai and Chips. AI is changing how we work today. That starts from coding to customer service, decision making, and even creativity. Talk about podcasts. I use AI tools quite a bit. But at the same time, work is not just a collection of tasks. It's how people learn, how they build judgment, how they build confidence, and ultimately create an identity over time. So today I want to ask a deeper question. What must be true for AI to genuinely augment human capability versus quietly reducing it? And to do that, I have with me Ramya Sampat Sharma, CHRO and board member of Sangoban India. She has had 3 decades of career spanning technology, including semiconductors, services, startups, and robotic startup included, and more recently, manufacturing. And Ramya, if you don't know her, and I know her very well, she's one of the smartest people you can meet, and her wisdom spans many segments, including HR. So welcome to the show, Ramya.
Thank you, Prakash. I'm glad you spoke so well of me.
You know, it's from the heart, and I must tell you that I know your schedule, the audience doesn't, and I am so thankful that you are able to take the time to be in the studio to do this.
I wouldn't do anything else but this. Thank you for having me.
So Ramya, you have spanned industry segments that are pretty unique.
Yeah.
Technology, services, manufacturing more recently, and startups.
Yeah.
Across all of those environments, what has taught you the most about people?
Across all of them, what has taught me the most about people? I feel like, Prakash, to me, the one consistent thing that I think has taught me the most has been zooming out to understand what is the context. And I feel too many times in HR, I think we miss the fact that our context precedes solution. Mm-hmm. And we often take solutions that work in one context and try and bring it to the other. So first is, I think, being sensitive to the fact that this is a completely different context and needs me to, you know, just orient my entire judgment towards a different context. So that's one. I think the other one, which I'll talk about later as we chat as well, is sort of, I think, first principles thinking, as in, what problem are we really solving? Mm-hmm. And I think having clarity on that is very important. Mm-hmm. I think too many times we get dragged into, you know, because this is a challenge with human mind, is that we've seen it before. It looks familiar. We think
pattern matching.
And I think, you know, that's the challenge with all of us, being aware of our patterns and being aware of the fact that we have to zoom out from there. So those two, I think, have helped me the most. Mm. And I genuinely believe, Prakash, that a healthy dose of failure has been good for me as well. It's something that we don't talk about enough, but I think it's precisely when you don't do something well that you actually learn. And you learn and you pick up the skills, the judgment, and the nuanced understanding of the problem to be able to apply it. I think that also has contributed as much.
And do you think success teaches you more than failure or otherwise?
I am going to give away my generation by saying it. I would say actually a lot. I think we are neurologically wired to celebrate success. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure too many of us at the end of, after something that's been wildly successful, we have the ability to reflect. I think we reflect the most when we've not been successful. Look, I think there's enough said about it. And, you know, my mother talks to me often about this state of sthita prajna, where you're sort of, you know, away from all of it and able to reflect. But to me personally, I think my biggest learnings have come when something has not worked well. And I think the capacity to zoom out and understand what was and why did it not work. And I feel this is the one skill that I wish and I talk about often. I think more young people should adapt is not get personally caught up in, you know, why, you know, connect yourself to the failure. Too many times we think the failure is a reflection on us, but sometimes it's a reflection on many other things. And the awareness of that allows us to handle the next situation differently. And so that's, I feel, for me personally, failures have been more, have taught me more.
And we'll come back to failing and how AI tools can help or mar it.
Yeah.
And as you went about that journey, the other question in my mind is, what's the one belief you change your mind about the most when it comes to people and careers?
You know, I think perhaps even a few years earlier, I would have said, and my thoughts on this were not as well formed as they are today. I would have said that you need to spot the really good talent, nurture them, grow them. And that's really what companies should be in pursuit of. But now after 29 years of working, I think system trumps the individual. And I feel if you have not created a system that, and what I mean by a system is a system where the talent can thrive, there has to be role clarity. There has to be, how do we make decisions about people? What are the consequences to choices people make? How do you incentivize them to go after what is really important? If you don't really think the system through, even the most incredible talent will struggle to perform. And, you know, I mean, and so what ends up then happening is even good people become average. So the bigger learning for me is system trumps individual. And a lot of the times I've come to now believe that for truly talent to be successful in an organization, it's a combination of system, how is it designed, capability, how do you invest and enhance, and how do you then direct that towards execution? And I think these three actually combine to bring out the best in talent. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that's, I think, my big, and a big part of the focus even in my current organization is less heroics, more systems.
And that system culture becomes a part of it, right?
Absolutely. In fact, what a powerful question you asked, Prakash. I think the system in action is really culture, right?
Oh, well said.
And, you know, the behaviors that will reinforce the system is really your culture that you talk about. You say, I'm people first. Fantastic. Sounds great. But does the system reinforce it? Or is people first a series of fairly individual actions or, you know, arbitrary actions? And often we confuse the two. I can take an arbitrary decision for the person I like, for the two people that come to me. But can I design a system such that everybody is taken care of? And if that is so, then the culture is people first, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Right. You can say we encourage growth internally, but if the system doesn't actually motivate people internally to apply for the next role, if they're not incentivized, if they're not, and we're not rewarding people internally for growth as much as you were, as they would get rewarded if they went outside, then really are we creating that culture where internal talent can flourish? So, yeah.
And the way you said it was very profound. And I feel just managing teams, and you have done that as well, it is very easy to say and so hard to do what you just said.
Yes.
Should be done. Very hard. And the consistency of it, to do it for a long period of time so that the system becomes the default behavior for the organization, is not easy.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I often feel like we can design, but the behavior will make sure whether it works or not.
Yeah.
And, you know, how do you make sure that as leaders, the same behavior is what we show up with every time? Because that's the behaviors we demonstrate is the system we create. The system we create is the outcome we get and the talent we grow. So, yeah.
And to that end, I want to start the AI part of the conversation as it relates to work.
Sure.
By getting your point of view on how do you see change? Because you have seen it across different industry segments now with manufacturing.
Yeah.
And people say this time the change driven by technology like AI is fundamentally different.
Yes.
In what ways do you think it is?
I think, Prakash, I have to say, for the one, AI is doing. And that has fundamentally shifted the nature of work. You know, in literally a span of 2 years, we've gone from using AI to, hey, I'm going to get a really smarter search engine to, I'm going to get it to create workflows and execute independently. Mm. And that's transformative. So one, of course, is that, because it fundamentally transforms how we think of work, how we think of people, how we think of capability. So there is that one thing. And the second is literally the pace of change. It's been astounding. And I think it's happening so fast that just as you're catching up to what's happening, something else is coming along. So I feel it's incumbent on all of us to make sure that both of these are something we acknowledge. And that's why it feels almost really different this time. Mm. It looks like it's here to stay.
Some segments are starting to get impacted, like coding or customer service. Mm. Where do you see manufacturing in that maturity curve in terms of deployment?
Yeah.
And understanding the impact of it.
Yeah. I would say, let me answer that through two, three lenses, right? I feel today, if you look at, you know, and I can talk about our own company, if you look at manufacturing lines, really a lot of the manufacturing can be pretty, when it is automated and when you have data, you can actually get better quality outcomes more reliably. And what AI does here is it actually makes sure that, especially in complex manufacturing work that like we do, you are never vulnerable to that person's capability level. Because with enough system training, the AI tools and nudges can make sure, or even you know, the expertise it gives the person. So it doesn't matter which of the 80 factories you're sitting in, we are not vulnerable because that person was not trained enough or whatever. Because the data that is emerging, that the tool has picked up over that many runs because of all the documentation, means that the person actually has the material to do what they have to do. That's one. Second, I think, Prakash, we have to really talk about this big one, which I don't know which context is where we'll talk about it. Is today manufacturing in India is very dependent on migrant labor. We are very vulnerable. And migrant labor is, by the nature of its work, you know, the first word, migrant, which means they go back to their hometowns. Mm. They're available 9 months a year. And often we are very vulnerable with them.
And why is that the case?
It is, you know, I'm not sure if you know, but most migrant workers will go back to their hometown for agriculture. They come out of their hometowns, mostly these days in the north and the east. They come to work, they'll earn enough, go back to their hometown for agriculture and any family support during key festivals, etc. And then they come back and look for the job. The fundamental goal for a lot of this labor is to be able to make enough money. And you have to understand, companies like us that will pay very well, we are still vulnerable because it's not a question of whether you pay well enough. It's a question of the fact whether the economics works out for the migrant labor. You know, does he find a housing cheap enough? Does he find food that's cheap enough that actually makes it easy for the person to stay? I guess coming back to the answer, what it means is that sometimes when you are, in spite of a pretty hefty workforce, we still rely on contract labor, which means more and more we have no choice but to automate. And, you know, actually find solutions where we are not this dependent on labor.
And the reason why manufacturing firms are more dependent on migrant labor is the absence of quality of labor, which is long-term, or something else?
No, some of it just has to do with the nature of work. You know, Sometimes what you're going to have is, and which is like exactly like, and this is going to lead very well into our AI conversation, is just the way you are going to decide what AI does at what human does. In factories, you're going to decide, where do I leverage people, which is in areas of judgment, complexity, decision-making, which is where I really want my full-time team focused on. And where it's like, hey, it's, you know, loading, unloading, for example, or it's managing the warehouse. That's where you typically end up using your migrant labor. That's really how organizations will think, because you want your own workforce to have the skills and expertise to be able to really, you know, focus on any decision making. So these are the people that you want looking at data coming out of the machines, analyzing, figuring out what we need to solve, etc., which is really where AI helps us. And then the remaining tasks, which are, you know, either transactional, mundane, etc., is given to migrant labor.
And the picture you painted, right, a combination of tasks done by different profile of people.
Yeah.
At least in the manufacturing context or any other industry context, do you believe the organizations are moving at the pace at which the change is happening, driven by AI, moving slower, moving faster?
I think the genuine truth is, Prakash, I think we're moving slower than we need to. And I feel, and this I'm seeing as a spectrum across all organizations and even in technologies, I mean, not averse to it. This is despite companies setting goals for their management team, saying, I need you to be AI savvy, etc. But that's not it. You know, I think about, because AI is going to need a fundamental rethink of work, you know, and I feel a lot of us haven't really wrapped our head around what does that really mean for us, like in terms of a fundamental rethink. Because you're not just thinking about, oh, which AI am I going to work? You're going to think about how does work fundamentally shift? What does the human do? What will AI do? It's just kind of the manufacturing conversation I was having with you.
Yeah.
Where do we need nuance? Where do we need complexity? Where do we need context that people will solve for? Where is it manual, repetitive that AI will solve for? And that rethink is something that, frankly, none of us have really wrapped our hands around today. And so, you know, we can set these goals saying you need to be AI savvy, get their certification, etc. But I feel like we haven't really begun to think as much as we should be.
Yeah, that's interesting. And if you look at organization space, whether it's slow or fast, ultimately organizations are based off people,
yes.
Right? People
yes.
have aspirations. And there is capability that they bring
yes.
to match that aspiration.
Yeah.
Now, with the change happening the way it is being driven by a technology like AI, what do you think about the capability aspect of people? And whether, of course, in productivity terms, whether it's writing or any other knowledge worker goals, including coding, there is an obvious connect to AI tools increasing productivity.
Yeah.
What about the other segments like manufacturing, you think? How does capability thrive or correlate with AI?
This is going to be an interesting one. I'll tell you why, Prakash. I feel like today we are all, at least I can speak from a manufacturing lens. I think we're all beginning to realize that AI is a significant player. Now, at several levels, right? Whether it's even in the sense of what people know of you today is generated through AI tools, or as profound as how work gets performed. I think the nature of work in all organizations, and what I can specifically in the context I stay in today, manufacturing, requires three things, I feel. Requires depth, requires expertise, and requires understanding context. So if you're doing glass, for example, there is a very specific nature that glass operates in, and the same for if you're doing making gypsum plasters and so forth. So our work is very technical in nature. It requires an understanding of all of that. So the interesting thing for all of us is going to be that if I am in sales, for example, I have to be very clear about where can AI actually support me, where it cannot. The ability to use, to have a conversation with our customers on why this technology is not only better for the environment, but better for you, et cetera, is something that we will depend on people. This is not something AI can do. But at the same time, the capacity to be able to give you very quick facts about all the things that you have, or actually give you data about the customer you're going to and their top problems, is something, frankly, AI can do. Good. So I feel that, and you can say this, take this to manufacturing, you can take it to any of the corporate groups, et cetera. I feel that this interplay, what will the person do? What will AI do? Where can I leverage it? If we get to that place of design, I think it'll be fantastic from a capability perspective and productivity perspective. We're not there as yet. But the tricky one, Prakash, which I think all of us are grappling with is, and it was very interesting that I was at a forum where There was a professor from a university in France who spoke about the people that actually leverage AI the most are people that have depth and experience. And I feel in order to really get the capability outputs and the productivity outputs from AI, you have to have subject matter expertise and you have to know what you're doing. And that's the conundrum for all of us, is that right now the productivity is going to come in places or at levels or when there is already sufficient depth, understanding of the subject. There is the ability, therefore, to have pattern recognition, the ability to apply judgment, nuance, understand context, all of that. Those people are really going to use AI the most.
Much more. So there are three parts you talked about, right? Depth, expertise, context.
Yes.
Which is what defines great work.
Yes.
And I agree with that. The question I wanted to ask is, if you marry that with young employees coming in, right? And if they start using AI, not only young, everybody is using AI tools very quickly, especially in areas like writing or coding.
Yeah.
What risks do you see in creating those three elements, depth, expertise, and context?
I would say it's so funny that I've, in recent times, started sending back presentations from some of my team members saying, look, I know you've used Claude to generate this. I need you to go back and think a little bit more about it. Which is that the risk that we run with where people have access to knowledge, but because they've not spent enough time and they don't have sufficient depth in a topic, what's coming out is fairly shallow. You know, and these things, you know, going back to the earlier conversation about you cannot design systems with very shallow knowledge. So one of the first things I think we're going to have to, I think, and this is a challenge for HR and for all of us as leaders in our respective organizations, is to make sure that we enable our team to spend a little more time articulating the first principles. What problem are we solving? Why do we think it needs solving? What is the solution I'm recommending? Why this solution? Why in this context? What will it change fundamentally? How will I know it'll be successful? And then by all means, use AI to give the presentation, but get that thinking sorted. And that thinking can only happen outside of the tool. It cannot happen with the tool. Because that thinking brings context in. It brings depth in. It brings understanding of the workforce. It brings understanding of the culture. All of the, only when you do all of that thinking, put it in and get me whatever you want. Like, that's no problem. But without that,
it'll be a challenge.
It will be a challenge, in my opinion. It will be a challenge. And I feel like, you know, Prakash, many of us who are going to find ourselves as avid supporters of AI and the belief that it can fundamentally transform work, at the same time, deeply conflicted because too soon, too quick, and at the younger levels of the organization, they will not build that judgment and that expertise. You know, so that's an interesting, I think, thing we're all going to have to juggle with.
Yeah. And in several scenarios in technology, even in the past, both can be true. It can be a very impactful technology and it can also be very disruptive technology. You just have to manage through both to create the best or impact the organization with the best that it offers and manage the downside risks to what that technology brings.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for manufacturing, at least one of the things that I see is the downside is lack of depth and expertise. And these kind of industries will simply not work without depth and expertise.
Yeah.
You have to know how glass is made. You just have to know the chemical composition. You have to know the temperatures. You have to, when you're doing ceramics, for example, you just have to get into the details. There is a specific mix to understanding how does insulation work and what actually happens. And our world, our industries are deeply technical.
And subject matter expertise led.
Absolutely. Science led.
Science led as well. Yeah. And in that situation, for a young person coming in and listening to our show as well, what would be your advice on the skills that would matter in this world?
I would say, before I get to the skills, perhaps the two things I would touch on from an attitude perspective, I think one is the willingness to go deep on topics. And I feel, I say this repeatedly, I say this frankly to my own kids. Technology is going to come at the intersection of, like we've been talking repeatedly, you have subject matter expertise, you understand data, you know what problem you're solving, apply AI, boom. So I feel like a lot of the young people are, you have to have these three things as skills. You know, number first is the attitude to go deep, the willingness to go deep, I think is very important. And the second is that the willingness to accept that technology is very simple. Input is equal to output. And you better focus on the input part of it. So that, those are the two sort of things from an attitude perspective. Skill, I feel like, you know, is really, I think the skill for problem solving, for example, what problem, framing the problem correctly is going to be important. You can only apply this in service of something.
Right.
Deciding, and so framing problems accurately will be important. Understanding context and having the ability to understand the context and the skills to understand which context requires what solution is going to be important, for example. I think the skill of decision making, where will this be a standard process that will benefit from technology and where does it need judgment, nuance, empathy, and will simply not benefit from technology? So I think these three skills will be important, I think.
And are there any habits you would advise them to pursue, which may be very contrarian in the current terms?
Mm-hmm.
Because I debate this very often with friends and even online, that writing has become easy.
It has.
But does not mean everybody has become a good writer.
Yes.
Right? So, by the same token, like in manufacturing context, if you're looking at problems differently, uniquely, and trying to solve them, putting more cycles into understanding the context, are there any behaviors you think youngsters would really benefit from developing early stage in their career?
I think, you know, behaviors, well, I can't emphasize this enough, Prakash. And I feel like this whole, you know, you and I were at Intel together and there was this whole learning mindset, growth mindset. I feel like that's such a, you know, at that time it felt like an oversimplified phrase, but I've come to put so much sort of importance on that. I think the capacity to keep learning is going to be absolutely one of the key behaviors that will change for us. If you don't keep learning, if you don't, because, you know, I think, like I said, input is equal to output. Technology will give you only what how you think, which is why, you know, in spite of AI, you're still not a great writer because it's just you putting your content. It's probably at best going to polish and regurgitate it back. But if you're not clear about what you're trying to say, you know, what is the outcome, etc., it won't give you that. So I think number one, I think learning is going to be absolutely critical. That's the behavior and the capacity to learn. And I think, sorry, I have to say it, but perhaps humility, you know, I think we can get carried away and feel powerful that we have the answers. But very quickly, we'll realize that we just don't have, without the depth, those answers don't matter and they won't scale for us. They won't allow us to grow. They won't allow us to, because, you know, it's interesting for all of us, Prakash, that the benefits of AI, the benefits of technology are most in repetitive, mundane, process-oriented tasks, which is at the bottom of the pyramid, so to speak. And that's the conundrum, is that, okay, everybody aspires to be a leader, but you can only get to being a leader when you've actually done your bit here, when you've learned, you have the capacity to apply judgment, you understand context, all the hard work that you're giving to AI today. So stick with some of these things because they'll actually enable growth, I feel.
So we talked about behaviors that youngsters can imbibe or build for great careers. At the same time, I keep thinking about one thing, Ramya, that we have been through careers when AI was not there.
Yeah.
And we had an ability to make mistakes, do early career work, which is repetitive, to build that judgment.
Yeah.
The younger generation coming into workforce right now do not have that ability to do early stage career work. Mm. At least in some segments, it is being removed at a very fast clip. Mm. How do you correlate that? Judgment is important, but younger generation may not have that latitude to build judgment.
Yeah. So there are two parts to this, Prakash, and I want to answer both. One, I think, is I sometimes see a lot of young people settling for roles which are mostly process. And they're very comfortable handling process, transaction, etc. And And I've spoken about this in the past and I continue to speak about this.
Can you give an example of that?
So, I mean, look, I'll give you an HR example. Hmm. Okay. A lot of the recruiters really put value in going through the entire recruitment process. And frankly, there is no merit there anymore, right? Because AI can do it for you. Correct? The moment you put yourself in a process that is repetitive, that is predictable, you know it can lead down automation. So often I ask people, if you're going there, think of one thing that you can build that requires specialization, that requires expertise, right? So you could be somebody, and let's stick with the recruitment thing, that knows how to get a really great job description so you get the great talent. That is something that AI simply cannot have. So making sure that you direct your attention to a skill set that is experience, I mean, expertise led, is something that I encourage a lot of younger children to do. Don't get carried away with the process of things. Get focused on things which require experience and depth. So that's one. Conversely, I think being able to provide this level of clarity to the young people is going to be very important for all of us. So two parts. One is, how do we create environments where they can actually go solve problems? How do they create that, simulate environments where they actually have to get into the details, understand how things work, etc. is something we will have to, I think, it, frankly, for a lot of us in HR, we are going to have to solve for that. I don't think we even wrapped our head around how do you build all these cool words you and I are saying, expertise, judgment, with having tools that can actually do much of the work. So how do you create it? How do you create environments where that can happen? How do you create simulations? How do you create training? How do you create exposure? We will have to design for that.
Yeah. And you think any of the judgment that cannot be automated, no matter what, is it expertise-led, what you talked about, or something else?
I think expertise. I think empathy and human decisions, anything that requires a perspective on... requires nuance, I don't think can be done through technology. And I feel, therefore, I think, you know, this is a conversation because I'm having inside my HR team and we are experimenting with a few agents. I can talk about it. Like, if the agents can manage your, you know, standard employee experience, onboarding, offboarding, etc., then as business HR, what you'll have to start getting into is in how does talent develop? What's the best way to get talent to develop? How do we actually give that exposure? We have to then get our hands dirty in that place and build expertise around that. Not in managing, we've onboarded this guy successfully, or we've offboarded it, or we've managed any routine transaction. That's not where the value is.
Right.
And so redirecting yourself into that other area, okay, is what's going to be, you know, where I have to have nuance, I have to know the person. There's an act of empathy involved, judgment. All of these, I don't think, can be automated.
Yeah, and I think the organization should take such long-term view of workflows in that environment.
Yeah.
In order to shape the work that humans do.
Yeah.
Towards that. Otherwise, and then iterate to get there.
Yeah.
Because nobody knows, like you said, how work is going to get shape, because we only know the tools that are available, not the tools that are going to be available in the future. So what principles, like you said, about first principles, how do you approach it with first principles? What's the problem you're trying to solve and build for people to do some part of it and tools to do other parts? Do you think that makes sense?
No, absolutely. I think you've said it so beautifully. And I think that's true. I would say, in my last organization, Prakash, it was a robotics automation thing. We thought robots could run warehouses. Eventually, we realized robots cannot run it without human interface. That finally, we were in the game of robots and humans. And I think if you just extrapolate that to today, we are in the whole thing of AI agents with people. And therefore, I think for any of us, whether I'm doing sales or I'm doing supply chain or I'm doing manufacturing or I'm doing HR or finance, even in finance, let's face it, technology can tell you and identify gaps, you know, what was done before, what is happening, what are typical moments where you need to plan for treasury, whatever, you know, technology will bubble all of that up. But the judgment to be able to say, yes, it needs to be this much, not so much, or this is the time, not that time, all of that will still rest with that person. And so what I think And this is quite an interesting one because I think our own appetite to get into work design is going to be instrumental.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. Interestingly, Prakash, it is going to come from many of us in our generation who have actually done the grunt work also. I think it's important. It's when you think of the process end to end, you can say, oh yeah, this we simply cannot let an agent do. But these pieces can absolutely be done by an agent and should be done by an agent.
Yeah. You know? In that process, you earlier part of the episode talked about shallow expertise.
Yes.
Can that be a consequence? AI tools unintentionally creating pockets of shallow expertise?
Absolutely. I think it's the biggest thing we should all be worried about is a level of shallowness coming because there is no incentive. And I genuinely mean it. You ask somebody today, a lot of the mails, more and more people are generating. You know, look, a lot of us are in the Microsoft environment. Copilot is your friend. You put stuff into Copilot, it regurgitates something for you, and then you send that out. But you really have not thought through, okay, wait, what are the consequences of this? And I feel so much time is now spent just communicating all these things and not enough spent on, okay, so what comes out of this? What needs action? What needs perspective? So I can already see the beginning of a certain level of shallowness. And I do worry that back in the day, it used to happen that it used to take us so much time to even put together. And I don't want to be one of those historians that's talking about back in the day, but I'm talking about a time where because the tools didn't exist, you had to get into details to make a report.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then you were on top of the details. And the moment you made the report, you also knew ki aage kya karna and what needed to get done next was very important.
Correct.
Right?
That's decision making, right? What comes next?
What comes next? What needs to be solved? What else has to happen? And how what will it take to close loop? Today, what ends up happening? Because you put it in a tool, it gives you this. You're sort of, I feel, kind of away from the outcomes and the understanding of what else needs to happen, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that, I do see a certain level of shallowness. I do see, right now, I think there is this fascination for what AI can do and ChatGPT produced images and, you know, Copilot.
Shiny new object.
Absolutely. Claude produced decks. There are definitely a PowerPoint presentations I've seen from my team that I've never thought I would see. But it, you know, I tell my team, look, by all means, use these tools. They are meant to minimize work for us. That's the idea. But the content that should have gone into it should have been original. It should be something that came out of our own thought, first principles, all the things I've spoken about.
Yeah. Awesome. So the other part of the conversation was more India specific.
Yeah.
But before we do that, I want to ask you a bunch of rapid fire questions.
Sure, let's go for it.
And it should be fun.
Okay.
Some HR and some about what you mentioned in your profile.
Yeah, okay.
So the first one thing AI will do better than humans and one thing it won't.
It'll definitely do repetitive tasks better than humans.
And one thing it won't?
Apply judgment on people.
Okay. If AI attended corporate meetings for a month, what would confuse it the most?
The words, let's take it offline.
Well said. One corporate phrase AI should permanently delete from PowerPoint decks.
We'll circle back because I think we just spent too much time circling back
and not enough landing. If AI wrote performance reviews, what phrase would appear everywhere?
Has potential, must go deep.
More so with AI.
Yes.
One thing employees pretend to care about but don't.
I'm going to stay safe here. But I would say any mail that starts with, please refer to my previous communication.
AI should definitely attend this meeting for humans. Fill in the blanks.
FII status update should be attended by AI, I think.
If AI became CHRO for 1 week, like yourself, what's the first thing it would misunderstand?
I think it would be shocked that policies don't actually drive action. It would be like, look, we wrote policy up. What's the problem?
Yeah. Yes. Your children disagree that you're funny. For the folks in the audience, your profile mentions that.
Okay.
That's why I'm asking this question. So should we trust them or you, and why?
Trust them. They know me the longest and have zero incentive to be polite.
So you get the most honest feedback from them.
Yes, I do.
Well done. So getting back to our conversation on AI impact on work, and I wanted to touch on under Indian constraints, how it would work. And a lot of people say it can be a great democratizing force.
Yes.
No question, it can be.
Yes.
But under specific conditions. So that's the conversation I want to have with you. And the first part of that would be to ask you, when it comes to workforce transformation that you talked about, several elements that can change in the workflow, what is uniquely Indian in that? Where do you think India is different in the AI era?
One, I think we have to have one of the largest, most digitally savvy workforce. I think we're genuinely, I mean, whether you look at the number of schools and students coming out with computer science degrees, or it's the number of technology companies in India, or the number of people that are doing. So I think that number is massive. So we are distinct in having that workforce. The other thing that's also distinct about India is the number of people in process industries.
Interesting.
You know,
say more about it.
I feel like a lot more, say, in business process organizations, a lot in manufacturing. So we have a lot of population in process industries as well. So you have both. You have the people that have the capacity to drive the technology, and you have places where we are especially vulnerable to this technology. So I think that's what makes India specifically unique. And I think the edge to this is in the last two decades or so, or even greater, but we've been powered by the services industry. I think that's where we are particularly sensitive, I feel, and India is different.
And in such an environment, you think AI adoption becomes easier or harder? One part could be because of digital savvy, it can become easier. But the deeper question was, India is also, there is inequality, right?
Mm.
And does AI amplify that? Who gets ahead? Who gets left behind? How do you think about it?
Well, thanks, Prakash. That's a very complex, there is no straight answer to this, but let me attempt an answer. It's at best sort of Ramya's version of the truth, the way I think about it. But I think the first lens with which we have to look at it is just education in India. I think we have industrialized education, industrialized colleges out from which graduates come off a certain college. You may remember this from our time at Intel. I know it's true even today in Sangamon that many times we talk about the fact that, look, the people graduate, but they don't have expertise in any particular topic. So they are actually ready for not a lot.
You got to retrain them.
Retrain them.
And even in this podcast, we have had several of such comments being made by the guests.
Right. Yeah. So the moment you're creating people that are ready only to manage process and transaction, you've already created vulnerability there. So that is something that I'm extraordinarily conscious of. That's one. I think the other thing that we must, so therefore also, I feel at a national level or whatever, you know, but even as parents or even as the ecosystem, I think encouraging greater depth, going into science, going into pure sciences, going into some of these things, I think we are actually going to see the benefits of that. And, you know, AI or technology is going to reward people that are at the intersection of many things. You know, they are the people, that's where technology, that can really boom. So people that operate at the intersection of multiple subjects will benefit the most. So one, the way we do our current education, I think, needs to change. The second is incentivizing the younger population to go into some of the pure sciences or pure arts, for God's sake. I think that would be as good as well. So that's one. And I think the third piece has been really around how do organizations create some level of inclusive growth, Prakash? I think we know today that despite a lot of what the government is doing, organizations have almost a moral responsibility to create a level of inclusive growth, either in communities around you or through some form of outreach. That is here to stay. And if you were to do that effectively, I think you can actually include a lot more people in some form of formal work, which then gives them access to a lot more things, and that gives them access to technology and things like that. So in Saint-Gobain, we have a program called Learn While Earn, where we allow people to work with us while pursuing an education, typically from economically backward families. And that has actually been a massive engine we've used to fuel a lot of our workforce, and it's been very powerful because it's created, they go back to their communities and, you know, and then more people join us, et cetera. And this is especially true where we have a lot of our factories. And I think this is the third way that you have to really say, okay, how do you make sure people don't get left behind in the whole thing and all of that? But I mean, we, you and I can spend like almost a day just talking about how do we make sure people don't get left behind through this, right? There is so much we have to do at different levels. It's going to be, when we solve for the organization, we are very solving for a very small slice of the pie because the rest of the society is still...
Yeah. And the points you mentioned in terms of focus on education, build curiosity at an individual level, and create more inclusive environments where the not only the government but private sector can play such a crucial role. I completely agree with that. Yeah.
I think also, you know, Prakash, we have in the last so many years in India, I feel, we have de-glamorized roles that will actually genuinely be irreplaceable in the time of AI. You know, it's
like which ones?
Like working with your hand, plumbing, electrician, carpenter, anything.
Artist.
You're simply not going to get enough of that.
Yeah.
You know, people that are weaving textiles, you know, AI will not make that fantastic fabric for you. It just will not.
Yeah.
And I feel because we've de-glamorized them, it's just one of the most hard, I'm sure it's true, has been true for you and Anjali when you've traveled, is when you travel, you're going to a weaver and you'll hear that they're the last of the weavers. Their children have now become Ola drivers or Uber, you know, something like...
And they've left their towns.
They've left their towns.
Yeah.
I feel this de-glamorization is actually where people will genuinely risk getting left behind, because you think of any large, you just think of what the country is up against. You think of the kind of growth we are facing, the kind of infrastructure we'll invest in.
Yeah.
There's just not enough trained people.
Yeah. The part I wanted to really come to right now is in the midst of all the strife, change, uncertainty, the thing that becomes super important is leadership.
Yes.
That builds trust, that creates a culture. You talked about system.
Yeah.
Where everybody can prosper.
Yeah.
So what do you believe are the key aspects of such a leadership in times we are living through?
I think two, three things are going to become important. One is providing clarity. What can be automated, what cannot, what needs expertise, what cannot. I think providing clarity is going to be very, very important. I think helping teams create guardrails. What will you drive towards AI? What will you not? What are the guardrails? How will it get used? Where do we absolutely rely on human judgment and will not? So I think that's the second thing. I think it's our job to explicitly create those guardrails. A third thing, I think, you know, Prakash, I've said this before in this conversation. I think the discipline. Look, these things will only work if you're all hyper-focused on making it work. You know, so it's all very well to say it's here, it can streamline, all of that, but that discipline is important. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this fantastic guy come and talk to us about, and a shout out to Shashi from Chini. He came to us to talk about, it's really like having another member of your workforce, but it has to be trained. And for that, you need discipline and you've got to be able to do the same thing over and over again because before it can meaningfully take away the work from you.
So it's like an intern.
It is. Absolutely. Yeah. It's an apprentice.
But it needs training.
It needs training. And so the discipline for training and the discipline that leaders will say, okay, we've now deployed it. We're going to apply it over and over again. Are we going to train it and teach it?
Yeah.
And eventually it'll take over the task.
You talked about clarity.
Yeah.
Right. And we also talked in the earlier part about some roles will get automated.
Yeah.
And humans will do other set of roles in the new workflow.
Yeah.
If you're leading such an organization through this period of change, how transparent can the leader be as you drive aggressively automation where it is needed? How can you build trust in such an environment where some roles will get automated? And if you're the person doing that role, you will not be happy about it.
Sure. Absolutely.
So how does a leader deal with this kind of dissonance?
I'd say, Prakash, I mean, look, I know we've discussed this in our jobs, and I know you and I especially have spoken about this. I think, look, whether you like it or not, the same rules apply for leaders then as it applies now, which is, I think you're going to have to be very, very transparent, and you have to be very open. I feel like giving these obfuscated answers will actually create more thrash in the system. I think we have to be very clear about our position on AI. What are we going to use it for? What will it solve? What will it not solve? And where it solves such that you are impacted, what next for you? How can you grow there? What's the line of sight? What's the path? And, you know, how will we equip you, build a capability path so you can get there? I think this complete picture and the clarity to explain that will actually give a lot of confidence. I think it's a human thing. The more we know, the less nervous we are. And I think the more you know about it, the better you feel. Right. So they should know what's coming. They should know if they are at risk, and they should know, even if they are at risk, what else lies ahead of them. Because let's face it, the fact is, inside many of these people lies experience, depth, judgment, all the things we don't want to lose.
Yeah. But I feel the people, especially leaders, need to create an environment where everyone mm-hmm. is comfortable asking the question why mm-hmm. as the workflow gets changed to more higher automation, so that you can collectively find answers versus this being have or have not. Have as in you're part of the new workflow, and the others who are not part of the new workflow, then you are insecure whether your job will remain or not. So that's the tension which I feel leaders will have to negotiate with for a long period of time.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think giving space for why, being able to articulate the why, allowing room for dissent, having people give meaningfully why they don't think AI can solve for it. There is, of course, you're absolutely right, a tendency to think that something can be automated, but it may actually require judgment in a way we didn't know. Yeah. 100% agree with what you're saying. Yeah. Yes.
And that brings me to the core question for this episode, right? Which is, what must hold true for AI to genuinely augment human capability instead of reducing it?
I think what must hold true is that AI must genuinely take away the mundane and the transactional. It must genuinely do that so it can elevate people to areas and domains and things or priorities that have to do with people, judgment, application, all of that. I think that's really what has to hold true for this whole thing to work. That it must really solve for taking away the transaction, and it must allow, therefore, people to elevate. I think that would be my answer.
And what could be the biggest mistake that organizations can make as they chart this course?
Gosh, at many levels, many things. Number one, I think being unclear about the consequences of this journey. I think this is like one of those things, you know, it's like a train that has left the station. Once you flag it off saying we're committed to AI, it will have consequences. Being aware of that is very, very important. And I think we must talk more openly about the consequences of this. Right now, it's a cool buzzword, but I feel like we don't spend enough time thinking about what is the consequence. Look, and I'm going to give you a very simple thing we're thinking about in HR. The moment I said that, look, we will create an agent that does, for example, we're thinking of using it to track different cases of international mobility, so that, you know, because it's all routine, it's transactional, it's person dependent, but doesn't need to be, okay? And it's honestly one of the work that I know the team would be very happy to get rid of. Okay, let's assume once that happens, then by God, it is going to put pressure on the rest of HR to make sure we are then focused on who's going for mobility, what do they expect to gain out of it, have they actually got what we wanted from them, what's been their experience, and so on and so forth. It is going to need us to elevate, you know. Yeah. So I think being very clear that once you flagged it off, you will also have to carry the whole thing through is one important line of sight that I think all of us are going to have, right? I think the other is, you know, I think, Prakash, I find too many leaders don't have an in-depth understanding of AI themselves. I think we ourselves are going to have to educate ourselves. What does it mean? These words are used very loosely. what are the different kinds of, you know, whatever we see, as simple as from search to as complex as an independent agent executing tasks. We have to understand the whole gamut.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our own education is vital, because then I think if you're in a position to make a decision, you should know everything there is to
report. Yeah, yeah. You know, one of the Singapore ministers recently talked, and he mentioned, I'm paraphrasing, but he mentioned that for us to create policies on AI, yeah, I must understand AI.
Yes.
I can't understand AI through briefings.
Correct. Isn't he the one who created his own workflow or something of that?
Correct. It is so true that unless you understand the depth, you will not be able to orchestrate it.
Yes. And I feel honestly, that is the one piece that I think we are living in parallel worlds where a few people focused on this are moving so fast, and conversely, the rest of us are catching up about it.
Yeah.
And I think governments are catching up about it. There's not enough spoken about AI governance, data, safety, application. And there's so many repercussions, Prakash, that right now you're only thinking about the delight of, wow, what if manual transactional work goes away?
True.
But once that goes away, our own capacity to perform at a higher level is going to come into question.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and making sure that we don't, frankly, misuse it.
The key question I have found very important to ask in such situations is, and then what?
And then what, yeah.
If everything is automated, and then what happens?
Correct.
Then how does the work happen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. 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 And I think this is, I see so many, in recent times I've seen work that have been done by team members where they've automated so far ahead that there is no scope for human judgment at all. And then you're like, but this entire process is about performance, which is a completely human process. So if you've automated it that far, you know, then what is really the task of managing people?
Agree. So we've come to close to the end of the episode, and I ask a final question to all my guests.
Yes.
And that is about India's foray in technologies like AI.
Mm-hmm.
It's less about domestic growth.
Yeah.
It's our place in the global technology ecosystem.
Yes.
Or the overall country's position in it. So from your vantage point, where do you see India 10, 15 years from now? And what needs to hold true, or two, three things must happen for making that vision a reality?
I think I'm going to repeat the same things. But firstly, I'm extraordinarily bullish about India's play in this whole thing. I feel we have the people, we have the skills. I think we've always had a population that's tremendously ambitious and hungry. And I think all of this play very well for us to feel bullish about any growth. That's one. I think the two, three things that will actually help, like I said, rightfully, one, of course, is, you know, the education system itself revamping. I think that's going to be a very important part of this entire growth in the next 15 years. We have to very rapidly figure out how can we build people that exist at the intersection, or how can we build people that are going to be doing all the other roles that'll still need to get done in the society. So that's one. I think the other to me is, I can't explain this. When faced with a challenge and you look at the way private infrastructure in India runs, the best of the minds will find a way to make it work. And I think today the best of the minds in the country today are really not, haven't even applied to how to scale AI. So I think the thing is going to be, how do people build depth? How do they build execution? I think it's going to be very important. So to me, right now, it all looks rosy. It looks like we have the potential to be there. I think there's a bigger question that keeps asking about our own proprietary AI, etc. I think that'll come later. But right now, given where we are, I feel very bullish about India's play.
Super. That's a great place to close, Ramya. Are there things, topics, your passions that we didn't speak about, you wanted to cover?
No, not at all. I think we've covered pretty much everything. Thank you for having me, Prakash. I really enjoyed it.
So did I. Thank you for coming over.
Sure.
Thank you for being on Chai and Chips. We are available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Please subscribe to our show and leave a review. If you like an episode, request you to send to your friends and family as it helps us get the word out. With that, see you next time.